Today's program was brought to you by Union Beer. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
This is Mike Edison, host of Art Senses of Seizures. You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, please visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, it's March 22nd, 2016. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 in the East Village in New York. We've got some great guests tonight, including Brian Strumka of Stillwater and Corey Bonfiglio, as well as some guys joining us later in the show from Pico Brew and Stillwater's new bar that's coming to New York. And Ann Becerra, my favorite co-host of the winter. How are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. How are you?
You know, we missed you. We did a couple pre-records. Last week we aired that really great show we recorded with Bill Kovaleski of Victory.
Yeah, and we were stuck in a blizzard in the middle of nowhere, Pennsylvania, and it was one of the best nights, best times. Those guys are great.
You got to hang out with Bill on the 20th anniversary of Victory, and the night before they announced that they merged with Southern Tier. So
yeah, I got that email like 2 seconds after I got back to work, and I was like, "So,
we're not really journalists. We don't know anything, But other guys, it's funny. Like guys like Beer Advocate, All About Beer, all those guys had the scoop like weeks ahead and already had their stories written.
Yeah, but they didn't get picked up in the special Victory van like we did.
Not
from
like
bus
that.
Station.
Yeah.
So
no way. So talking about special brewers and stuff, my friend Aliyah Akam posted this thing on Zagat about the 10 most influential craft brewers in America. And it had guys like, Steve Hindy and Ken Grossman. But it picked some young guys. It included Yeppe of Evil Twin. And I'm bringing us other guys I think are really influential. And one of them is Brian Strumka from Stillwater. You know, there was the guys from the 80s way back when. But it seems like in the last, 10 years, there's a whole new crop of people. And we're really happy to have you on the show, Brian from Stillwater. How are you, man?
I'm doing good.
It's been a while.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, it's been a busy year. It's been hard to get the schedule together to get on the show, but I'm glad I can make it.
No, it's good to have you on. I mean, one of your guys is here, Corey Bonfiglio, someone that we know very well from the New York City craft beer scene. And tell us, Corey, you're on the Stillwater team now.
Yes, indeed. Very proud, very happy. I think kind of been a long time coming, so it's cool that it's all worked out that way. Very proud, very happy.
So what are you guys doing? And you got Tanner Wally.
Hello there. How are we?
So you guys are kind of like real kind of New York City like craft beer guys and, beverage manager types. What are you guys doing with Brian Strumke?
Shotgunning
classic.
That's sort of, definitely how it began, sure. There's a lot going on, and we're sort of taking it as it comes. I think the next most important project for us is our forthcoming bar that we're going to be working on together. We are calling it Classique, which I think is extremely fitting for what we're going to do ultimately. So Brian, Tanner, and myself are taking the reins in terms of creative output. It's going to be here in Bushwick, which I'm really looking forward to because there's so much creativity in this neighborhood, and it's going to be really it's going to be an honor to be a part of the scene.
And then Tanner, how did you get involved in the project?
Brian Strumke and I actually had the opportunity to drink a lot of different wine over the last couple of months. I had just opened up a wine bar in the West Village. I'm no longer with, but got that off the ground and running. And Brian and I had the opportunity to sort of connect on not only a beer level, but also on a wine level. We were able to travel to Portugal and Spain most recently, we're able to sort of explore some different concepts throughout the sort of the peninsula.
So you guys are going to be doing beer and wine at the new bar.
That's correct. Yeah. That's sort of the idea. We'd like it to be, and I'll let Brian comment on this as soon as he's back. He had to take a phone call. But I think that we're going to focus a lot on the wine aspect. It will be primarily Stillwater beer with some other...
Why don't you guys tell me about Brian? Because Brian's like an enigmatic person. I mean, he was a DJ. He's was Gypsy Brewing, and he's and even though he's, you think of him being based in Baltimore, he's really to me he's a New York City guy living in Williamsburg.
Yeah, for sure. He's been a New York City dude for years now, on and off, and a little more stable in the last couple of years. And I think our friendship has strengthened quite a bit, and his friendship with a lot of. Just beer people and bar people in New York City, which is great. I'd love to hand the reins over to him right now.
Yeah, sorry, I had to jump out.
That shows how busy you are. He's for, got phone calls
quick,
and
quick emergency phone call. We're trying to rush some beer over to McKellar's festival.
Let's where is that festival, Brian?
It's in Copenhagen.
Nice, man.
Yeah.
And what's the beer that we're drinking now? Let's talk about it. This is a really cool label. What is it? Goza Gone Wild.
Yeah, this is, I would probably say, venture to say it's probably the most famed Stillwater beer at the moment, even though it's probably not the most produced, even though, but as far as like the beer geeks and the hype and ratings and such go, it's been on many. I've won a lot of awards for like highest rated beers in the world for this guy.
It's good. It's also really good with the pizza. You know, it's a perfect amount of acidity with all this cheese.
And what's your take on Stillwater? I mean, I'm sure you've known Brian for a while.
Yeah, I've known Brian for a long time, and I think every time he talks about the beers he's brewing, you know, I think you've got to be a musician, right? Of some sort.
Yeah.
The way he talks about it is the way that a lot of my friends in the music business talk about the creativity and the creative process and how it comes in sort of, you know, like visualizes a beer more so than, I guess, technical. At least that's when I hear you talk. And it's always really interesting to hear, you know, his take on where the ideas come from, where the look comes from, the aesthetic. I think all of it's just, you know, like an artwork as opposed to just the beer, which I think is kind of cool.
And Corey, for you, like, you know, you ran an open proletariat. You're still part of Beer Street, two great New York City beer bars.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, from that side of the business, you know, how did Stillwater beers go over for you? Were you selling a lot of Stillwater?
Yeah, absolutely, man. It's always been a great pleasure to do so. It's been almost too easy to do so because I think Brian's concepts and his aesthetic fit so well into what we tried to establish at Proletariat and now at Beer Street and soon to be at Classique as well. Obviously. So, you know, I think my enjoying selling his beer ultimately led into our ultimate friendship and now, you know, collaboration, which is really something special, I think.
Wow. And for you, like, because I know you're only here for one segment.
Yes.
You know, what are some of the pitfalls for you in the beer industry? You know, you've worked in a lot of places. You're a very seasoned veteran. What are some pitfalls that you might point out now that you know you're opening a new bar or things you're on the lookout for?
You know, I've always tried to be education forward in what I did, but only as far as our guests are really interested. Certainly, you don't want to talk somebody's ear off when they're not interested in what you're doing. So, you know, pushing the boundaries of service and hospitality in the beer world, which I think is still an extremely young concept, at least in New York City, as well as, you know, having a good time myself and, you know, being very appreciative of when people can really gel with what I'm doing in my spots and in my position, ultimately.
And then you definitely, so Brian, Tanner, you guys are going to have a strong wine component at the new bar.
The concept is, you know, Brian and I had, like I mentioned earlier, we had the opportunity to travel, some with Brian, some without, and we were able to sort of take in a lot of different concepts. There's a few different bars. There's a spot we spent some time in Portugal called El Faya, which is super rad. La Volatil and Bar Brutal, both in
He's
Barcelona.
He's reading off his iPhone.
I just didn't want to, you know. Brian's had some opportunities to travel abroad elsewhere, obviously. We want to bring sort of, you know, we want to emphasis on natural wines, but certainly if it tastes good, we want to pour it and bring that level of hospitality I think Corey spoke to this new concept as well.
Yeah, I think the style of beer that I've been producing from the beginning, the saisons and stuff, are all kind of, a lot of it was kind of based off my love for sparkling wine and champagne. So that also now recently is kind of this new kind of trend of petulant natural wines are just kind of like, they're such a obvious offspring to a lot of the funky beers and, you know, breaded saisons and the sours, Cantillon and stuff. So I just think for me, palate wise was an obvious progression. I'm always wanting to push the boundaries in my beer, and it led me in the wine as well. So I wanted to dabble in both markets.
In your travels, did you meet any winemakers that you guys are going to end up working together? Maybe a, you know, beer wine collaboration or
yeah.
hybrid.
Yeah, yeah. Our first we have a we're releasing our first wine should be within the next year. It's a we teamed up with.
Wait, it's a wine. It's not like a beer aged in their barrels.
Correct? No.
Oh, okay.
No, we're doing a whole a wine project called Sound Wine. Based off of both of our music careers.
Yeah, we were able to. Brian had expressed to me wanting to make some wine, be it sparkling or otherwise, and I thought what better way to sort of introduce that concept than to travel to Portugal, where I have some close friends there who were able to link us up with a winemaker. I don't know if we should... With Dirk Neoport.
You can't say his name.
Neoport Wines. Well, we're still in developing this. Dirk Neoport and we're teaming up to make a really delicious wine, as well as a good friend of mine, another musician in Lisbon by the name of Pierre Darren, who's also involved in the new project.
Well, talking about wine, the big news this winter was that you don't need sommeliers anymore because everyone just wants to drink rosé and sparkling. So just make sparkling rosé.
Just cut me right out of this. That's fine.
And there's one more guy in the studio we get to say hi to yet. Mike Brennan. He's from Pico Brew.
Hey, Jimmy. You
know a lot about beer. Just as a little intro, tell us what you guys have been doing. Your Zymatic is something you're working with breweries on. You know a lot about brewing technology.
Exactly. Yeah, so Pico Brew is a company out of Seattle, Washington. Started in 2010. We've developed a few pieces of specialty equipment. Our flagship product is the Zymatic, and that's a small all-grain brewing appliance. It's fully automated. You program your recipes on a web app. You're able to run a mash in there. It'll do anything you really want it to do. It's almost infinitely programmable. For guys like these guys here with Stillwater, you know, the ability to be able to proof and prototype things, and it's really what it's about is about being hands-off, having it control all those process variables, and not take up your time. You know, brewers, as you guys know, the hardest thing is, for you guys, is your labor. You know, the time that it takes to pilot or to work on the beers that you do, it gives you that ability to have that running in the background.
Can I fit one of these in my apartment in
you
Brooklyn?
Can definitely fit in your apartment. The footprint on it's like 18 by 24. It's very, very small. And it makes a 2.5 gallon batch of beer. It's very, very precise.
So you can do prototypes and fool around.
Yeah, you push the button on, you walk
He's
away.
Smiling over there, Brian.
I'm gonna have I'll have a bar and a brew pub.
Well, if I can say if I can say one thing about you guys at Stillwater, just listening to what you just told me, I'm very impressed that you guys have spent the time to spend some time in Europe and to understand the origins of a lot of these beers that we are all interested in.
Well, it's crucial, right? You can't know where you're going unless you know where you've been, so
very
to speak.
Much.
And we're going to have a lot to talk about. Let's get Corey a little more on. So, Corey, quick rundown on you, man. I know you're talking about what you're doing going forward. But
yes, sir.
Just tell us about some of the – one thing I love when you had Proletariat, you always talk about like was rare and unusual beers.
Uh-huh.
And what made you have that philosophy?
Just curiosity, wanting to try as much as possible and all these fun labels and languages that I couldn't pronounce and – you know, over the years, sort of just collecting labels in my mind, which now they have apps for, which is great. And then, you know, that ultimately, at the end of a long and somewhat brutal career, being able to, you know, express that passion in a way where I'm a salesman, but I'm not a salesman, really.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So tonight, it's like, well, this is New York City Craft Beer Dude. You're going to work at Beer Street. Tell us where Beer Street is.
Yeah,
and the kind of things you're pouring there. Because I know a lot of our listeners, when they come to New York, they want to check out new places.
Right on. Yeah, we're in Williamsburg. We're in the sort of quiet Italian area in Williamsburg. Graham Avenue at Withers Street, 413 Graham. We actually recently just shifted the focus. It had already been strong towards local, but we shifted it over to primarily. So, you know, it might be a 60-40, 70-30 draft split in terms of what is local and new. And that's going to be supplemented by, you know, some excellent beer from our friends at Be United.
Like when I was there last year, you had Jerome from BFM hanging out there.
Yeah, and he'll be back towards the end of April, so we'll see you all there for that. That'll be great.
And then jumping ahead, so tomorrow night, talk about new bars that are opening besides your own. Mm-hmm. Where are you going tomorrow night?
Tomorrow night, we're going to go check out Cardiff Giant. Our homies, the Wiley brothers and Steven, some really wonderful people that are doing it right in this industry and in this scene and in general. I think, you know, those guys have been hugely influential.
Yeah, well, Owl Farm.
Yep, absolutely. Wars. Yes.
So where is this? What neighborhood is it in? Because I want to check it out, too.
That's a good question. I have no idea.
You have no idea. Does anyone know? Myrtle Avenue or something, right?
Is it in this vicinity?
It's near Justin's house.
It's in Fort Greene.
Fort Greene. Myrtle Avenue. All right.
Very cool.
Well, I'll tell you, Corey, I'm sorry you have to leave. I know you have to go actually work at a shift. So we'll probably end up there tonight later.
Yeah.
And we'll
please
see
do,
you.
Please do.
And we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions
it's
Radio.
Been all right. Real.
Don't worry, and I'll be back in a hurry. I gotta go to 15th Street and cop another 40. It doesn't matter, cause we're drunk and we're young. A couple kids trying to have some fun. And we know these are the days we'll look back upon.
In 1996, L Knife & Son acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn, but has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Union Beer has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Kings County, Brooklyn, through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. Through the highest possible level of service, outstanding salesmanship of the ultimate lineup of brands, and a paramount focus on education on all levels, Union Beer has solidified its position as the only source for the best selection of beers in the 14 counties of southeastern New York. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, check us out, heritageradionetwork.org. There's over 30 shows. There's a cheese show, a farm show, so many cool shows. There's a fermenting show, and there's our
Ferment
show.
About it.
Beer Sessions Radio with Ann. So, you know, Brian Strumpke is here, and Corey Bonfilio just left. He's going to go work at Beer Street. If you come to New York, check out Beer Street on Graham Avenue. But, Brian, you know, it's funny. You're going to open a new bar out here in Bushwick. And I don't know if you know about this. There's actually a license called a restaurant brewery license. You still have to go through the TTB, but it's New York State. And it allows you to have a brew pub for on-premise only and a full liquor license. Mm-hmm. It's kind of that secret, the secret license that most people don't know about because it's kind of dated. But you might want to check that out. I know it's fun. We were talking earlier about, you know, licenses and how to open a bar.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of cool quirks about New York State laws. That there's a lot of great different licenses in New York State to get.
Yeah, everyone's being really helpful to our industry now, right?
Yeah.
But I know, did you ever think about having a brew pub in your own? Because I know you have your own brand, but
yeah, there's been multiple attempts at different projects, but it just hasn't, the right situation hasn't come into fruition yet.
Because we're talking with Mike here from this Pico Brew, and I read your thing about the Zymatic. I had no idea what it was, and basically you said it was a pilot system, and that's why Brian got excited. So
yeah, exactly. You need the ability to, you know, play with your ingredients and just be able to experiment all day long. I mean, as a brewer, I mean, tell me that's not paradise.
Yeah, I think that's like the MO, right?
Yeah. But yeah, so that turned you on, right, Brian?
Oh, yeah, it would be it actually, you know, as long as. It's something that I know there's a system in Germany that's manufactured in Germany. I think it's kind of similar. I don't know what it's basically just an all-in-one automated brew kit. But this, from the pictures I saw of your contraption,
it sounds like one of those, you know, and like some fantasy machine and like some Greek, you know, philosopher where they just, you put anything in it and it would come out, you know.
Yeah, maybe Bill and Ted are going to pop out of it, right? With like,
it's beer at your fingertips. It is a fantasy. We've made it come true. So,
but what are we drinking now? You just poured us something new. Fear of ghosts, I think it is.
Fear of ghosts.
Yeah, this is another one of the new beers that I've been producing at what I kind of affectionately call the Funk Stillwater Funk Factory in Denver, Colorado. Crazy Mountain Brewing. I've been using it's a smoked sour wheat with a mixed fermentation with Brettanomyces and Saccharomyces as well, farmhouse strain.
So is this like your takeoff on like a Lichtenhainer or something?
Yeah, it pulls from that. I mean, most of the beers are just more concept. Like, I don't know, the idea of Fear of Ghosts, it's kind of a, like a play on words with, I don't know, like past thoughts and feelings.
What's the fear of beer styles? Like there's certain bars where you're like, you know, what is it, sour? Oh, it's smoked. Oh no, you know, it's all of these things.
Fear of beer styles. That's
fear of beer styles.
Tanner, you as a wine guy, I mean, you know a lot about beer too. So how do you taste when you taste Brian's beers?
I think that one of the things that really attracted me to Brian's styles is that A, there is such a common thread between each of the styles that he's presented, that I've tasted, all the different types of beer that I've had the pleasure of drinking in bars and in his apartment and on his roof and in Europe and all over the place that we've been. There is a common thread between all of them, and frankly, as a wine guy, I find that acidity tends to be, you know, for me, the most important thing. It is the backbone to the beverage, and with Brian's beers, I find there to be this beautiful complexity, all sort of glued together by this bright acidity, which I find to be, and of course that comes with a lot of your styles, which lean toward the sour, the goza styles, which is just part of the genetics of that beer in general. But I find again that common thread to have a lot of like vibrancy.
Brian, I mean, talking about pilot system, now we know that Zymatic's a little pilot system. How do you try out your recipes and your the different beers? Do you work on a pilot system? You just go in and do it.
It depends. Like sometimes I trial brew 200 barrels at a time. Sometimes it's 20. I recently started working with to make it a little less frightening to jump into new products. I started working with a brewery, a new farmhouse brewery. It's a hop farm. They're doing a pilot malting facility and brew pub in outside of Leesburg, Virginia, called Vanish. And so I kind of have a deal with them where we're going to like prototype like two or three new Stillwater beers every month on a 7-barrel system just for site on there, so we can test out new concepts without, you know, jumping right into a 100-barrel production batch. And also with the work with like new ingredients, like because it is a hop farm and there's a pilot malting house there, we'll be able to, like, you know, try different maltings on grains and different grains and just getting weird.
I think people love about you as well. I mean, obviously, you know, everybody has different tastes in beer and it's great, but the artwork, you know, on the front, I hear that all the time. What's that bottle? Pass it over here. What's that can? You know, and I think.
But then I hear, like, there's so many people are like, your beers aren't selling because nobody knows what the hell they are.
Well, that's true, too. Listen, it's not even about, there's not a lot of consistency. I understand that, you know, from a branding point of view. But at the same time, you know, it's experimental. I think everybody knows that. Who does your artwork? You know, is it one person? Is it a company? Like, where do all these concepts come from visually?
I work with two artists that are just friends of mine. One is an old childhood friend, Lee Verzosa. So all the, like, the original Stillwater, the things that look kind of more...
Like this one, like the Fear of Ghosts?
Yeah, the more, like, kind of, like, romanticism.
Cool.
Like, gothic look comes from Lee. And then over the past year, when I started the contemporary works and a lot of the really crazy and statement pieces, like, the next one we have Tuppence. And, like, here's a beer that looks like Swedish fish and tastes like Swedish fish. And here's an old world porter with, like, a little... message about the whole big beer buyouts. So it's cool as an artist. Like, this has been fantastic for me as an artist, like to work with two people that can help me translate my ideas, and it's been really kind of freeing. Just one, having two outlets, and the artists are so totally different. Like the contemporary work is just all clean line and modernism. All the others, you know, it's more hands-on.
So what did you say? You said Tuppence is a commentary on the big beer buyouts?
It's a commentary on the big beer buyouts.
It's like Tuppence from, like, Mary Poppins.
Yeah, isn't Tuppence a Tuppence? Isn't it the form of, like, two pence or something like that?
Tuppence a bag.
Yeah,
and it was kind of, like, I think a play on, like, what porter cost back in the day. So I set out to make an old world porter, so it's 100% Brett C. fermented, and Brett C. Britannomyces, I think it's Colossinii, that's how I say it, originated in English porters. So I was like, I collaborated with a friend, Steve Jones from Oliver Brewing in Baltimore, who's English, and he's just strictly like Ringwood style brewer. And so him and I drafted the recipe because he's very traditional, and then And then I said, we're going to ferment it 100% with Brett.
Let's talk about Baltimore. So you're from Baltimore.
Yeah.
And then you have a bar there of Love and Regret, right?
Yeah.
What's that place like?
It's been fantastic. It's awesome. It's kind of like my gallery and home in Baltimore. So, you know, it always has everything I do. But again, we have a huge expanded wine and spirits program. And we got really lucked out, and we have a great license where we can even sell liquor and booze and wine to go. So,
wow, so that's Maryland.
Go?
Wow.
Liquor to go.
Does it have to be sealed? Like you sell entire bottles, or you can do like a shot to go?
No.
So it's like you're a liquor store.
I don't know. I mean, I've been to New Orleans. It's not a big deal. So who knows?
And then we have, and then it's a gastropub, so we have really like internationally inspired cuisine. My chef, Keith Curley, has been... He's been with us since the beginning. It's killing it. So it's
Tanner, have you been down awesome. There?
I have yet to visit Of Love and Regret, unfortunately. I plan to within the next couple of
weeks. I do think a Baltimore trip's in the work for us, Ann.
I think that's not I've so hard
been.
To do at
have
all.
Have you been, Mike?
Right on the Bolt
no,
bus,
I
baby.
But, I call, we're going to be down there. Yeah, we're going to be down there in Baltimore in June. National Homebrew Conference is down there in early June. Yeah, so I'm going to have to crash your party.
Are you guys going to have food at Classique?
It's basically, I think... Classique is going to kind of take a... It's going to be very similar in concept to Love and Regret, but more scaled down and concentrated. We're in New York, and we can't... Like, we have the luxury to be able to really spread out in Baltimore. Our venue is even bigger than we need it originally. We get to just go nuts and have a ridiculous inventory all the time. So, I mean, in New York, I think it'll be more streamlined. I think it'll be, the beer focus will be predominantly, if not almost exclusively, Stillwater.
How do you get away with that, just out of curiosity? Is it?
I mean, we're not, I mean, I don't
mean
know.
How do you get away with that?
I didn't
like
know
you're
that was
trying
a,
to. I
didn't
just
know
mean,
that was a rule, but I guess it is a rule. So we'll have maybe like.
Predominantly.
I mean. Yeah, we have six drafts, so I have one rotating. Mm-hmm. And plus, I'm going to want to carry my friends' beers and things that I dig. But we don't want to, it's not going to be. You know, it's more of a concept bar. Like, we don't want beer to be the complete focus. We also want, you know, the wine to...
Yeah, we want the wine to, I would say, you know, is a major part of it. No doubt about that.
I think it's funny, too, that now, like, you know, so for so long, so many winemakers were kind of turning their nose up at brewers. And I think it's, you know, now with all the creativity and everyone that's doing these amazingly, you know, new and different concepts, now they're kind of getting a little jealous, like a little of the jealousy bug, you know, for brewers. And I think it's so cool to see all those collaborations between wineries and breweries and, you know, the barrels passing around, yeast strains and such. I think that's it's a cool world. We're all together, right?
We're getting married, our two concepts.
So, Tanner, going back with you. So you worked at the Terroir bars.
I did.
Paul Greco, right?
I did. I opened Terroir.
Amazing guy. James Beard Award winner.
Indeed. Yeah, I opened up Terroir in 2008 with Mr. Greco and a team, a small team of other good dudes and dudettes.
Were you there? For a long time, he started the Summer of Riesling.
Summer of Riesling, yeah. So I was there. I was part of that movement in the first year we did the Summer of Riesling. It was kind of it really sort of screwed with people's heads, but it was certainly a bold move. We continued it throughout my tenure there. I think he's still doing it, but not exclusively Riesling, which is we've learned to be quite difficult even 6 or 7 or 8 years in. So
and there's a great restaurant that Paul was part of and they split up. Hearth is on First Avenue and 12th Street. And actually, if you want to find it, it's a quiet little bar inside the restaurant where people usually wait to sit. Mm-hmm. I like to go there and have dinner, and you can look at the Riesling list. It's pretty awesome.
It's pretty fantastic.
Were you involved in the Metal Mondays? Because that was my favorite.
Metal Mondays happened at Murray Hill with Kate Wernicke, and I wasn't there for that. I certainly was with the company, but I wasn't there on Mondays.
What was the Metal Mondays?
Metal Mondays, the metal themed and wine night. You know, it's
like heavy metal music.
They do sherry bombs or something. They drop shots of sherry in pilsners and like chug it.
Well, it was funny. What about it? It seems like it would be a kitschy concept, but it was actually really well thought out. It made sense. The pairings with the musicians and everything worked, and there was, you know, thought into it and research. It was really awesome.
Was
you get to listen
cool.
to Motorhead and drink.
I have several Metal Monday T-shirts if you want.
My big shout out to Brian Strumpke is that the guy's balancing a lot of things. He's a business guy, a creative guy. He took a serious phone call. Now he's like feverishly doing something on his phone. But I respect you, man. I'm really glad he came on the show. And this next beer, quick shout out. What is this one? It's a weird Swedish one.
Okay, this is sorry. It's trying to divert a crisis. This is a Sirlit It's part of this. I started doing a series of beers with my friends Dugas Brewing in Sweden.
Of course, Dugas in Sweden. Yes.
Yeah.
Dugas. Fish makers.
Nah, roll.
That's
so,
a good one.
So it's funny, like, you know, I was designing these beers just specifically for the American market specifically. So I'm like, just to kind of like, you know, just play on the whole American theme, I decided, I was like, what do Americans know about Sweden? IKEA and Swedish fish. So the first beer, for Ghosts, which I wasn't able to bring, is a Scandinavian Goza, and the label looks like it's an IKEA product. And this one, Sirlet, is a Swedish sour ale with lingonberries and rhubarb. So, and it's made to taste. And
it's
taste
nice.
Like
it's a nice one.
Swedish fish.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, it's March 22nd, 2016, and we're talking to Brian Strumka, or Brian Stillwater Strumka, if you know him on Facebook. So, Brian, you made some crazy beers in Sweden, and another question, Brendan Palferman, one of our listeners, and he's a great, if you ever worried about your trademarks and other fights about beer labels, that's Brendan Palferman. He's a lawyer up in Syracuse. He'll be on our show in May. He said he was out in Buffalo, New York at the Blue Monk Bar, and he tried your Rockstar Farmer, which you say you don't want to talk about because it's too popular.
No, I was just joking. I didn't bring that one to the show because I figured that's what you would expect me to bring because it was the other half club. So I just wanted to be tricky.
That's good. So tell us more. This is Silberg. What's it's from the Dugas Brewery in Sweden.
Sirlet.
Sirlet.
I love Swedish fish and... And I like making big practical jokes.
But it's nice.
Are you going to do a Swedish meatball beer next?
I think we discussed that.
Not a bad one.
No, he's not. I don't want to say anyone's name. But all the beers you brought for us are kind of sour. Is that really what you're into now with beer?
Well, it's kind of like what... When I originally started... Like, before I started Stillwater, I was just homebrewing, and I met Brian Ewing from 12%. All the beers that he fell in love with and I wanted to produce were actually more sour beers and Brettanomyces fermented. And it just kind of, at the beginning, it was hard to find a facility to let me produce beer of in that nature. So now it's finding, like, basically I have, like, a new playground, and so I'm kind of going nuts and just dropping a lot of new product.
I remember when I first met you, it was like you were working with Paul, the homebrewer Paul.
Yeah, Kutzer.
And you had, like, your first saisons, and you came to this event. We did Battle of the Belgians. And that's one thing that's always stood out about you is that you go to festivals, you have a presence, and, you know, you're interacting with people. So what's going on in Copenhagen? Because I know you're on the phone, and you're dealing with some export issue or import issue.
Yeah, I messed up, and I only shipped half the beer to the warehouse where it's being put together for the ship, and that's not cool.
But that's a side of the business you deal with as well. So you're dealing with some logistics stuff. And
yeah, I think that needs to change quite soon. I juggle so much. I think I run hot, so I'm always on the move, and I can juggle a lot of things at once, even if it's like controlled chaos. So it's hard for me to kind of delegate a lot of things because...
Do you book your own airlines?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So of all the places you've gone, is there anything that stood out the most as far as collaboration? Like something that you'll never forget, the most interesting? Doesn't have to be the best or your favorite beer, but, you know, an experience.
A good story.
Yeah.
I did a really interesting ayahuasca work in
did you really?
In Brazil.
Oh my!
And which caused me to produce a beer inspired by it. which oddly enough, ayahuasca is has a kind of a similar quality to a weird Flemish red or sour, like an old Brune or something.
Huh.
Like an earthy old Brune.
Okay.
Did you know that, Tanner?
I did. I've heard this story a few times. It's a good one. I don't know if we have time for it, but
yeah, I think it's a bit to go into.
What was the story you're going to tell, Tanner?
Oh no,
kind of lit up.
Oh no, that, I was thinking of that one. That's why I went. Oh, you, I was pointing, saying, I know what you're going to say.
No, I'm not going to say that.
You're not going to say
that.
But yeah, it was really, it was beautiful. It was an amazing, amazing experience and something that that'll change you.
So tell us. So is it Copenhagen? There's a festival coming up. Is this the beginning of May? It's like the Copenhagen Beer Fest.
Yeah, I think it's right after the it's CBC. It's called CBC Copenhagen Beer Celebration, and it's right after the CBC in Philly. So it's been really confusing, and people are like, "Are you going to be at CBC?" I'm like, "Which one?" I'll be at both though, to some degree.
I'm sure Pico Brew. You'll probably be there as well, right? At CBC.
Yeah, we'll be over at CBC.
Cool.
So Mike, you travel a lot too.
The US one.
You go to how many different breweries and how many regions do you travel to?
You know, I cover the entire United States. This trip, this is my third state in the last 2 weeks. So I just came from Denver this morning.
Are there any breweries that use your system, or that's just like, you know, a customer could walk in and kind of see what it's all about and see how it works without being a dedicated brewer?
Yeah, most of our brewers that use it, it's obviously it's back in the brew house, mm-hmm. but I've got a couple brewers out in Sacramento. I've got New Glory Craft Brewing Company and New Helvetia, who both, they have it pretty easily seen. They keep it, in fact, one of them, New Glory, he'll sometimes run the mash data profile. You'd actually, it collects data for you, and they'll put it up on the screen out in the tap room, so people are like, what's going on back there?
So, that's cool. So you can check it out without being a pro brewer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. It's very easy to work with.
Very cool.
Well, let's make a toast to Corey Bonfilio, because he's not here. We had a great time talking to him, and I know he's over at Beer Street right now, and it's really cool. So how did you decide to start working with Corey? Because we know him as a craft beer bar legend here.
Yeah, I think it's just the way I kind of do business. It's I don't know, maybe to a fault. It's like I tend to like mix a lot of business and friendship. But it's kind of like the only way I know how to go about things. I like to work with people I can trust. And so I'm really picky about kind of people that I do work with and that I do trust. I have a very sensitive kind of personality. So when I do meet people that don't annoy me and I think are intelligent, I tend to gravitate towards them. And if our kind of flow just goes together, I'm always, I travel a lot. I'm just, vagabond style and just come across and allow myself to be open to people and experiences. And I guess one of my skills is just feeling out people and situations, and that's why I collaborate so much.
Cool. Corey's a good travel buddy.
I bet he is. But I'm going to talk more about Copenhagen because I've never been there. So McKellar, he's having a festival.
Yeah.
And what other brewers are going to be there that you know?
It's a lot. Probably too much. It's like the biggest friends convention. Like when it's overwhelming. I don't know where to start. And it's like it's most of my
name closer. Like two brewers that are going to be there.
Omnipolo will be there. Giant Bitter, McKellar, of course.
And where's Giant Bitter from?
That's my friend Soren. Funny enough, he owns a couple bars in Denmark as well. And a brewery, Giant Bitter. But we're doing a little sub-project, because I'm not busy enough, called DeLorean, with the Danish O, a little slicer. That'll be, and it's all going to be avant-garde lagers, because I think lagers are cool. And last year, I think I shocked a lot of people by coming out with
Yacht,
Yacht and... Mono, which Yacht, I think, is currently number one pale lager in the world on Rapier.
Wow.
So
what about, remember you came up with the Classique, the original Classique?
Yeah.
Do you remember that still? I don't know.
What?
Come Classique. What was that supposed to be? Wasn't that supposed to be like some kind of American?
Yeah, it's similar. It was kind of like, that's my artistic commentary on industrial brewing. Where it's, I wanted to... Craft beer's argument for industrial beer being shitty is that it's lesser ingredients, corn and rice and sugar. And I just wanted to be cheeky and make a beer with all the same ingredients that would taste good. And then kind of like say, because I don't, you know, I'm fighting the fight with everyone else in craft beer, but I enjoy the idea of like having a really strong argument. And I thought that argument was shallow. We need a better motto and mantra if we're going to overcome this.
So once you made Classique, how would you compare that to the industrial beer you modeled on? I mean, are you saying they're equal? Or are you saying is your
well? I did. It was like shocking reason? Because it proved to the craft beer people that you can make a good beer with those types of ingredients, and so it's not necessarily the fault of the ingredients; it's the construction. And then it kind of shows, you know, mass industrial beer that this is what you could do if you just. Change the marketing around a bit.
Okay, now I'm going to keep asking about beer. So, of Love and Regret, which actually I have on at tap at Jimmy's number 43, and I've been buying a couple of kegs. People love that beer. How did you come up with that beer?
That was my buddy Paul that was on the show with me maybe a few years ago. He was just a buddy.
That was one of your first recipes, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was our first, it was funny, as a home brewer, I pretty much didn't collaborate at all. I was just like, it's my thing. I'm going to control all this. And now as a professional brewer, it's like I seem to collaborate all the time. But I need my alone time. So there's the beers I say I dictate, and there's the beers I collaborate on. So I need to be able to put out my full concepts. That was the first time I collaborated with another brewer as a home brewer. So and it was just, I don't know, we wanted to make a beer that reminded us of springtime. So it was...
And one more beer, the Bronze Age.
Yeah.
That's a beer I bought a lot. How did you come up with that?
That one is really cool because I brewed it at Hoofd en Dormaal in Belgium, which is... can't be more real deal of a farmhouse brewery as that. I mean, they're farmers first and brewers second.
As these styles came about anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So I always, you know, like coming up from the, you know, being a very progressive person in the Saison kind of scene, I was really thrilled to do something extremely real deal. And so I kept that one really simple and just wanted to use, they have a lot of horses there. So I was like, we just used horse feed spelt and then just like the hops that they grow at the brewery and just their house yeast and just kept it really simple.
That's a great one, man. It was really great.
Of all the systems that you've worked on, is there one that's like your dream system? Like your ultimate, this is the best setup, you guys have got it made?
Good question. Mm-hmm. That's a good one.
Yeah. I mean, I have to say I'm really pleased and sometimes feel a bit spoiled with Two Roads because it is, couldn't be much more state of the art. And the more we've learned, and it's big boy brewing. It's a 100-barrel brew house, and it's fully automated. And I really have been, it's like I've been working my way up to this. It's like it's being a musician, and it's like you're recording your albums in like, you know, smaller home studios, and then you move up to like the mid-range studios, and then next thing you know, you're, you know, major label studios. So to me, it's kind of cool, and it's exciting because... just because it's made in a big facility with state-of-the-art equipment doesn't mean... I mean, look at Beyonce.
Yeah, now we're talking.
there we go.
I was up at Two Roads last year, and it's an amazing place. I mean, up in... is it Connecticut?
Connecticut.
What town? Somewhere,
yeah.
In Connecticut. But.
Hardington? Stratford? Stratford?
Stratford,
yeah.
Yeah, Two Roads. So.
I'm just making up words.
Well, tell you what, we're going to wrap up the show in a few minutes. Everyone just want to just say one more thing. Tannen?
I'm really looking forward to this project that Brian and I have coming, both the wine project and the bar that we are opening soon or over the summer, hopefully. And I'm happy to be here.
Classique out in Bushwick.
Classique in Bushwick, that's it.
Classique.
Yeah.
You go, Mike, come on.
All right. Well, you know, for those of you that are interested in checking out how the Zymatic works, we're going to be tomorrow here in Manhattan at it's called the Luxury Tech Show. I don't know a lot about it, but we're going to be there tomorrow. Craft Brewers Conference, of course, in Philly.
But you also have a homebrew system too, don't you?
The Zymatic, of course, is the our flagship one. However, we have a new one called the Pico, which is really for those people out there who you're not really a brewer, but you just love draft quality craft beer in your house, and that's basically uses a small recipe cartridge. We're licensing.
It's like
an
espresso machine, but you can make beer.
Yeah. You put a cartridge into it, except our cartridge is biodegradable. And all those recipes are all licensed from brewers all over the world. I've got brewers here in the U.S. I've got about 100 partners. I've got Rogue, Abita, Dogfish Head.
Well, that's actually why you guys reached out to us, and I'm glad I got a chance to talk about Pico Brew, Zymatic, and Brian. It's nice to have you on the show again, man.
Yeah, it's good to be back. Good to see you guys.
Yeah, and thanks for talking about your beers.
Yeah.
I just, a little, not off subject, but just have to do a quick sending amazing positive thoughts and prayers out to Belgium. I mean, I know everyone in the beer world right now is so kind of tore up, our friends and colleagues and stuff. So we're all standing with you. Keep sending
all right,
good
cheers
notes
to them. And a commercial shout out, our big event, New York City Hot Sauce Expo, is coming up April 23rd and 24th. Let's check it out. It's more about hot sauce than anything, but it's definitely the best hot sauce in the universe. All right. I'd like to thank everyone for joining me on the show, Brian, Corey, Mike, Ann, and Tanner. And I'd like to thank our sponsors at Union Beer Distributors who have helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Thanks to our producers, engineers, Justin and David. And thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on the Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Yeah. Woo!
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.